Hey, you globetrotters and world explorers. Welcome back. I'm Daniel.
And I'm Garrett, and we're your hosts of Modern Gaze. On today's episode, we're talking about traveling the world with pride and authenticity with the Nomadic Boys. Stefan and his partner Sebastian have become international gay travel experts, and their new book, Out in the World, The Gay Guide to Traveling with Pride, is full of tips, advice, and resources on the best and safest places to visit around the world. The book talks about traveling with confidence, connecting with your local communities, and you can find practical tips on how to travel safely. I mean, I know that there's so many places I want to travel that I may be too fearful to book the trip because I'm worried, like, are gays allowed to go there?
I have to agree. And thank God for Sebastian and Stefan, because if I was to write a travel book, the only thing you would find in my book is head to the Abbey on Santa Monica Boulevard and then followed by a breakfast at Pump. That'd be my book with bottomless mimosas and drag brunch.
I think that there are so many really cool hidden gems that we would never know of because we didn't take the risk to go to a place that we maybe were too fearful to check out.
Absolutely. And there are so many places that you don't even think that
would have a gay scene.
You can't share a room together and you have to book two beds, like all these kind of things as gay men that we have to think about, which are in this book.
And also in our chat, Stefan talks about this really kind of cool underground hidden club that he only discovered through social media and Grindr. It was really more of like a hidden gay community that had to exist on the DL. Mm-hmm. And that's how people were able to build connection and community and create nightlife. So let's just maybe get into this one.
Let's get into it. Us gays, we just know how to do stuff.
Well, what about modern gays?
That's easy. Modern gays do everything.
Today we have Stefan from Nomadic Boys joining Modern Gays.
Hello. Hi, boys. Thanks for having me.
On your Instagram, Nomadic Boys, you have incredible experiences around the world.
Literally.
You're in a new city, it seems like, every other week. You're sharing so many amazing images and videos of beautiful places and people.
And also great tips.
And you're also showing a true, authentic experience, especially one from a gay point of view, and being out and proud with your partner, Sebastian, who's the other half of Nomadic Boys.
Yes.
Like, are you fully in travel mode all year round now?
I wish I could say yes. We're not. I mean, it's exhausting to do that, and it's also expensive. A lot of what we post is from previous trips, or it's to fit a theme of the day or a mm-hmm. campaign happening. This year, we were in Australia for Mardi Gras. We went to Melbourne, where you boys are now, I believe.
Yes.
And then went to Bhutan. It was the first time you've been to Bhutan. In our lives, there's a place we've always wanted to go to. And then now back in Europe, the book's coming out next week. So we're going to be based in and around London and Europe to promote it.
Super exciting about the book launch, Out in the World, The Gay Guide to Traveling with Pride. Tell us a little bit about the inspiration for the book and what we can expect.
So our book came off the back of an article by Guardian newspaper. They did an article in early 2022 about our relationship, how we met. And the publishers picked that up and said to us, hey, guys, would you be interested in doing a book about it? And we thought, well, people still read books. I mean, we get really bored before a trip. But there's a big market for it. And it's never been done before because all the guidebooks, Rough Guide, Lonely Planet that you get, is from a third person perspective. It's very general. It's very do this, do that. Whereas a first-person narrative equivalent, sort of, it's different. And especially for the gay community, you relate to the personality more and you feel the tips more, I guess is a better way to put it. The book, how we've done it, we've structured it. It's in our first-person voice, and we've structured it into the six continents we've traveled to and picked the best or our favorite destinations, gay destinations from each one, and focus a little travel story for each one, practical tips, and best things to do for gay travelers.
Speaking of travel and visiting the six different continents and going on your world tour, I think to kick things off, we'll jump into a little icebreaker that we've put together for you. So
first thing that comes to your mind, you know, don't take too much time, just whatever you feel is
in your gut. So first question is, best city for the nightlife?
Best city for the nightlife would have to be Madrid.
Okay, that's probably a fair answer.
Very good. Jeez, a huge gay community.
Next is hottest guys.
Italian.
Okay. Best Pride festival.
Sao Paulo Pride, the biggest one in the world. Okay. I've been to it.
Best nude beach.
Is Sitges has a great one, Playa de los Muertos.
Okay. Best underground parties.
We went in Georgia, the country. They've got a club called Bassiani. Horror nights on Saturday night, and it's the biggest gay club in the Caucasus countries, and it's a very, very homophobic society, and it's quite exclusive, not in a like a VIP way, but in a very, they protect their gay community there from the outside violence. So to go to this club, you've got to apply online with your passport or ID details, and then they send you a link to then buy a ticket to go to the event.
Wow.
And then when you're there, you have to put a sticker on your camera. You're not allowed to take photos because this is a queer space for the local community. It's very touching, sad, but it was a great night out.
With your travels and knowing so many different places that are really safe for gay people or queer people, and seeing not so open spaces where someone might have to do some research and to like understand how much PDA is acceptable, or can I even go?
Can I even share a room with my husband or with my partner, right?
Right. So what's the first thing that you would start researching or doing as a travel expert, but as someone who also wants to be open and free with who they are, but also respectful of the communities that they're visiting?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good point, and I always make this comparison. My straight friends who have the same exercise to do, me, the gay one, doing the similar thing. First thing you do is go online, Google, is it legal to be gay there? You want to know what the laws are. Can I actually go there and be open? I'm not talking about going around flying rainbow flags, but when there is an anti-gay law in a country, whatever your gay inclination or how open you are, you feel this pressure. You feel, oh, have I got to go back in the closet? Am I out enough? Am I being
too right?
Feel that pressure. And do you really want that on a holiday? Is that the sort of holiday you want? I want to go everywhere. It's my dream to go to every country in the world. It's going to be quite a limited dream, but I do love going to, and there's some very beautiful places. Egypt has got the pyramids, for goodness sake. It's somewhere you really want to go to, but Egypt has a nasty anti-gay law and it's enforced. The police actually go on Grindr with fake accounts and they target gays and they arrest them. So we went to Egypt for my birthday last year, and the first reaction was, oh crap, it's illegal to be gay there. And not only is it illegal, is that law enforced? So you've got Maldives and Sri Lanka, Malaysia, they've got anti-gay laws, but they're not enforced.
Right. Okay,
the fact that they're there is not nice and you feel that pressure, but they're not actually enforced. That's the second thing you want to check. So is there an anti-gay law? Then is it enforced? What extent is it enforced? And then you sort of want to research, what's society like as a whole? So a lot of Eastern European countries, by example, Hungary, Slovakia, Georgia, these are countries that don't have an anti-gay law, but society is still very conservative compared to West Europe, North America. You wouldn't walk down the street holding hands. You wouldn't probably do that in a lot of suburb cities around the world, but generally you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do that in Poland. There was at the time where a few years ago when it was, they had anti-gay stickers in towns that prove how anti-gay they are. Yet there's no anti-gay law there. So then how much is being openly gay a threat? It's already, there's three barriers there that I've got to research that my best friends who are straight don't have to bother with. Can I be openly gay? And I'm not talking about holding hands with Seb in public, but a simple thing like, oh, there's an eyelash on your cheek, let me rub it off for you, or you know, put your hand around your head, or can I dance with my butt? These basic PDAs, can I do that? And then if not, where are the queer spaces where I can do that?
Mm-hmm.
Is the next layer of research. Where are the gay bars and clubs where I can be my authentic self? And I want to go to see the pyramids in Egypt. I want to go and see these beautiful monuments in places like Turkey or the Middle East. But then you just have to think about, okay, what am I going to do? What are you going to do to go there? It's a choice that every gay traveler has to make, a moral choice. A lot of people say, I'm not going to a country that has an anti-gay law. I'm going to boycott them.
Right.
We've done that. We've been to Russia. We've been to such places, and we've had to tone down our relationship. We pretend we're two friends traveling. We'll book two single beds instead of a double bed in a hotel.
Yeah.
If we feel it's a threat or a local guest house. So yeah, but we're not going to let it stop us from going to a place. But we have to assess the extent to which we're going to be out.
For sure. And in terms of you starting Nomadic Boys, did this come from your personal experience when doing research and booking your travel plans? Did you guys feel inspired to want to share your knowledge and become travel experts, particularly for the queer community? Or what was the motivation behind starting the brand, essentially?
I want to say yes, it was. But actually, it started by purely accidental. So I used to be a lawyer in London. Seb was a computer programmer, and we met in 2009. For years we talked about going for a big trip, traveling, and then after a big trip in Thailand, we did our first big trip as a gay couple, and furthest we've been. We loved it. We said we want more of this. We'd hit our 30s, and we were saying, what do we want from life? We don't want kids. We don't want the pressures of school fees and mortgage. We want to travel. We want to see the world. So we saved up. We planned, and then in 2014, we were in a position where we were financially ready to leave our jobs, leave our lives in London, and went for a big trip in Asia. Now, the plan was he'd work online with some website designing company he'd set up, and I really wanted to be an English teacher because you can work in places like Taiwan or South Korea and travel and save and travel with that. We set up Nomadic Boys at the time purely for friends and family to follow along the trip. Seb's mother especially was worried about how he was, and he'd do videos like, ah, salut la France, I'm okay, I'm here. And that was it. And then about a year into our trip, we started noticing these random gay guys from around the world looking at our content. And we were thinking, what was going on here? Basically, what was happening? We were publishing content about our experience traveling in Asia as a gay couple.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, 2014, 2015, there was nothing online or very little online, good quality, up-to-date stuff. And where are the gay hotels in Bali? Where are the gay bars in Shanghai? What's the gay scene like in Mongolia or places? So they were finding our content, and we realized we could do something more productive with this. So we started shifting the focus of our writing for gay travelers beyond friends and family, and that's really where it took off.
That's so exciting. We travel a little bit together. We don't do as much traveling as we would like. It's definitely good to have people like yourself who are out and proud and living authentically and traveling the world, because when we do go to book those trips, then we have those resources accessible to go to them and know where to stay. So I think it's great.
Love that.
You also found a partner, someone to join you on these adventures. How did that happen? And has traveling brought you
closer,
or has it affected your relationship in ways that you didn't expect?
So we got together in 2009. We met, this was the year that Grindr actually was born. So we met before the days of Grindr. You know, I don't know how old you kids are, if you remember the days when we used to meet in a bar, the old fashioned way. We met in a bar. We met in the GAY bar in Soho. Because that's how it's done in those days. People still meet in bars. But anyway, we met in a gay bar in Soho. I mean, it took off from there. Traveling has made us stronger.
Mm.
And we're not only traveling together, we're sort of working together, because Nomadic Boys is our baby, it's our business. So we're working and traveling and living together. So it's definitely made our relationship more intense and has tested it. It really has tested it and brought us closer together. If we weren't meant to be with each other, it wouldn't have worked. And we always say the best test of a relationship, of a new relationship, is that first trip together you take. Can you survive it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's a real make or break moment for a lot of new relationships. And our first trip we did, we went to France to visit his family on a 2-week, and we did a road trip around and camped, and we survived.
That's good. Just?
I'm Greek, I'm passionate, I like an argument. He likes to get rough, he's French, he's passionate. So there's always going to be the banter and the bickering.
But yeah.
At the end of the day, there is love at the core. And that's what always comes out.
You guys are traveling constantly, seeing different parts of the world. What are some of the challenges and triumphs of traveling as a gay couple together that you would say that you and Sebi have encountered?
The first thing is, can we share a double bed? Can we stay in a gay-friendly hotel that will allow us to share a double bed without judgment? And then when you come on a holiday, most people don't want to go for a big campaign. They just want to chill and have a nice time. The last thing you need is to go into a hotel and feel like that you're the spotlight. Right. Everyone's staring because you're two men and there's judgment and people are looking at you. They're probably not, but you feel that. You will feel that because the way we're conditioned to think. So gay-friendly hotels are usually the big brands like the Marriotts, the Hyatts, the Sofitels. They're used to it. They tend to have an international standard of how their staff should act towards people, and it's applied throughout the world. We've noticed whether it's in the Middle East or in Australia. And I'll give you one example. I did a trip in Romania, so I messaged a few hotels around Brasov and Bucharest in Romania. Are you okay with hosting a gay couple? Do you mind that we want to share a bed? Two of them came back saying, which really shocked me, yes, but you know, bear in mind it's a family hotel and you must keep this to the bedroom. Don't do anything like this in the spaces. We have children here. And I was thinking, what do you think we're going to be doing in the public space? I'm not asking you if we'll have a sex party or run around naked. I'm just asking, can we share it? You know what I mean? So it's that reaction which just makes... You don't want to go there.
This might be a bit of a bold statement, but I think it could be just a bit of stereotypes, judgment in terms of like what a typical gay life is. And I think a lot of people think that, yes, we like to party. Yes, we like to be out there and whatever.
Like anybody else.
Like anybody else. But yeah. I think a lot of people that don't understand the community have this sense of judgment or have a preconceived idea of what to expect when, you know, a gay couple comes into town. It's going to cause a ruckus.
Absolutely. Of course, you don't want to feel the pressure of having to be. But then at the same time, it's important that visibility has an educative effect. It's important, definitely.
No, for sure, definitely. I mean, Garrett and I, whenever we travel, I don't know if you guys do this, but whenever we go to, like, obviously, you know, a very gay-friendly place, we always like to say it's our anniversary or it's like a special milestone, so then we get a cheeky upgrade.
Yes.
We can get like a bit more of a lavish, nicer room if we like book the cheaper room, you know? That's something we like to do.
After a while, though, if said gay hotel is following your social media, they realize, oh, you have an anniversary every month. You know, you got to be careful.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Yeah, you got to. Yeah, I guess.
It hasn't worked yet on the frigging airlines. We've not got an upgrade from these subtle hints. Oh, we're going on a wedding anniversary. It's our honeymoon. No, it hasn't worked yet.
Yeah, airlines, I think, is a bit more difficult than hotels. Hotels is a bit easier. And restaurants. Restaurants, you can get like a cheeky bottle of champagne. Yeah.
So other than sharing the bed, there's so many international reports that come together and they balance, you know, the laws with the acceptance or with some of the potential dangerous and life-threatening practices that can come into play when it might be just violence from public or it could be government bodies that will have very harsh punishment. Do you think that that's something you want to just kind of ignore, or you want to get in and advocate for or do more research around, or like, does that come into play when you're thinking about booking?
Absolutely does come to play. It's a double-edged sword because on the one hand, and with our book especially, what we think is so important is the visibility. The more gay couples, gay travelers go to such places and show with normal people, it has an educative and impact. It has an important impact on local society. And that's how you get change. That's how you get conversations started. There is very little visibility, and the more visibility there is, the better. However, having said that, do you want to be a campaigner on your trip, on your travels? Some people don't want that, and they just want to chill on a nice beach in Spain where it's gay friendly. For the more adventurous of us that want to see these more exciting places and don't want to turn our backs a beautiful monument, you do have to make that decision. You have to consider it. You can't ignore it. Mm. For the sake of your own safety, if anything, you've got to be aware of how the local police will react. Where is the local embassy? What do you have to do in terms of a police confrontation? Do you need to give a little cash? How does it work? You don't want to be thinking yourself out, but they are important things. Of course, you have to consider them. Sure. The one actually that you Gerard, that I think is very prominent, and we haven't talked about, is the use of Grindr in a lot of places. So in Egypt, it's used by police to target gays. And I had a friend who went there, and he used it. And he was, and I said, how did you use it in Egypt? Because we just turned it off and didn't bother. We just took a screenshot of the warning message they give and then turned it off. And he said, check the other social media channels, do a video call to verify your identity, and then you meet in a public place to see. And if you still have a weird reaction, don't go there. And he had a great time. I don't know if I'd feel comfortable.
I would not feel comfortable. I would feel so scared. I mean,
yeah.
I think as bad as it is today, like, you know, with people being on it in general. So I couldn't even imagine being on in Egypt and then potentially speaking to the police or the law enforcement.
Mm.
Yeah, but totally. We went in the closet for Egypt. We just really wanted to see the pyramids. It was a lifelong dream, but we accepted that we were two mates. And you probably get this a lot. We get a lot of, are you brothers?
Yeah, we get that. Yeah.
I know it doesn't come from a bad place, but it pisses me off because you wouldn't say that to a straight couple. When I'm with my sister.
Yes, correct. That's true. That's actually a really good point. I get pissed off because Garrett's like 10 years older than me. So then I'm automatically pushed up 10 years. So I actually get offended when people are like, are you brothers? I'm like, no, we're like nowhere near the same age.
But they say we're twins. I'm like, oh, I'll take the compliment. Thank you.
I'm like, especially when I have a beard and like Garrett's like freshly clean shaved and like smooth bummed. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is not the same age. But anyway, I guess to lighten the mood and kind of switch dynamics, talk to us about some of the most welcoming places in the world that are very arms open, rainbow flag, LGBTQ+ friendly. Like where would you say are probably the most top on your radar? Yeah.
Top destinations.
Oh, by far, Iceland, Canada, they are miles ahead. They top all these surveys and lists. Detailing the most gay-friendly countries in the world, most gay travel-friendly. They are Iceland, for example. We went there for our anniversary a few Februarys ago to see the Northern Lights as well. We did a big road trip, and you've got Pink Iceland there, a gay-owned company that is famous for its tours. They sponsored one of the drag race competitions years back, and it's a tiny country. It's less than half a million. Reykjavik is the capital. It's got a small gay scene. We felt comfortable walking the streets holding hands. They don't give a toss there.
Okay.
It's like diversity tolerance is ingrained in their psyche, in their culture. It has been for years. When they voted for gay marriage, I think it was 2010, don't quote me on that, but it was early on. Normally when you have these debates, you've got a large conservative minority who blabbers on and has, like, when you vote, they vote, and there's a big minority. They had, it was full unanimous.
Wow.
You know, it's such a gay-friendly place, and loved it. And it's also rewarding. It's so beautiful. There's all this stunning scenery to check out. Like, if you're a Eurovision fan, there's a museum for it up in the north of the country. Canada is another one with LGBTQ rights ingrained in its laws and societies, and every city, every big city has a massive gay scene, big pride, Montreal, Toronto pride. Justin Trudeau, the leader of a country, we were in Montreal Pride in 2017, and he was there with the then gay leader of Ireland and another local mayor, but they were there, like the leaders of a country. Justin Trudeau is a leader of a country, leading the parade, walking, not just there, cameras by, I'm going home. He was there leading the parade.
That's amazing.
That says a lot about a country, and hence why it's such a gay-friendly place. What sums it up is when they were interviewing this awful man who rules Chechnya, part of Russia, which has terrible anti-gay laws. And he said, we don't have gay here. No gay here.
Yeah.
They're in Canada. They always say they're in Canada. It's got that reputation of being this haven.
What was your experience like in Australia? Like, you went to Sydney, you went to Melbourne.
So I was also going to add Australia to the list. It's very gay. Well, now, I must qualify that we've only been to Melbourne and Sydney, and Great Barrier Reef, Lady Elliot Island. So, and this is a massive continent of a country with all its issues of, as every country does, with degrees of conservatism. But the places we went to, North South Wales, Melbourne, Great Ocean, very gay. Like, it's in the air. You go there and you're gay.
Yeah, there's a huge scene in both those cities.
What was very funny is the the banter between the Sydney and the Melbourne.
Ah, you experienced that, did you?
You saw that.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So what was your verdict? What was your verdict, Melbourne or Sydney?
I mean, obviously, I've got to say Melbourne, otherwise...
No, you don't have to. You don't have to. You can say...
No. If you want the beach, sun, lifestyle, you're going to say Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Melbourne is more down to earth. It's more friendly. It felt more like being in Europe. It felt more approachable with people. There's a bit less attitude. I might be in trouble with Sydney friends.
It's okay. We found that when we went to Sydney.
I love Sydney. I mean, I love Sydney. I love visiting. I love that Melbourne has a completely different energy. We have totally different vibes and you can find your vibe.
If you had to share some standout stories of where you and Seb have traveled together, where would you say that they have been and what's made them special?
A story that will stay with you forever.
Oh, easy answer. We went to Bhutan earlier this year, which is a small Himalayan country, sort of nestled between Tibet, South China, and India. And it's in the Himalayan mountains. But for years, it was closed off. And they only recently opened up to tourism. And the society there is still, I don't want to say entrenched because it sounds negative, but they still have their ways that they had 500 years ago. The men still dress in a traditional garb. It's like a medieval robe to go to in public places. The Tibetan art in the monasteries is beautiful. The temples, it's stunning. And it's such a rich culture that you feel like you've gone back 500 years. Have you seen Black Panther?
Yes. Yeah.
The Marvel movie and Wakanda. It reminded me that like Wakanda in Asia, closed the community, which was kind of advanced in their own way. And then they sort of discussed, should we open up to the world? They sort of do open up to the world. They slowly let people trickle in. And they've got this huge focus on high value, low quantity tourism. So it's quite expensive to go. You've got to pay $100 a day fee to the government as a tourist fee. And you've got to be on a tour. So it's not cheap. There's no backpacker budget travel there like there is in Nepal or India. Now, they got rid of their anti-gay law in 2021 and they've been embracing LGBTQ tourism. Now, this is a big thing for Asia. Remember, this is a continent that's quite behind with their gay rights in many ways compared to Australia, West Europe, and North America. So for a country to get rid of their anti-gay law there is a big deal. And they're slowly... really growing in confidence, the gay community. It was lovely to see that. But it's a stunning country. It's got this rich culture. It's got this fantastic, fantastic food. You've never tried anything like it. And the highlight there is a place called Tiger's Nest Monastery. It's a gorgeous monastery. Like, it feels like it's been carved by the gods on this mountain, 3,100 meters above ground. You have to trek up to it. It's beautiful, really, really beautiful. Never been to a place like Bhutan. That's probably the most memorable place we've been to.
It sounds super magical. I mean, you sold me on it. I mean,
I went on the trip with you.
I was
visualizing. It's beautiful.
You just transcended us to Bhutan. Yeah. There you go.
Oh God! And the penis there is really well regarded. The erect phallus is a thing. I'm not joking. It's seen as a symbol of fertility and to ward off evil. So you see a lot of dicks.
Painting. Everywhere. Oh, wow.
Beautiful, beautiful, I mean, beautiful art.
We love everywhere. Erect penises. That's what we like to see.
Like, I listen to the podcast, lads. I know you do.
No, I guess on your travel adventures, you know, do you find that you have this really dynamic point of view of gay communities or these kind of like gayborhoods around the world? And is that something that you pay attention to when you're traveling, and similarities that tie us all together and specific things that may be pretty unique or different?
We always try and seek out gay communities, gay-friendly businesses, gay businesses, and try to support them as much as possible, especially in countries where there are anti-gay laws. And what we used to think at the beginning, and we get a lot of criticism for, is how dare you go to a country with an anti-gay law? You should be boycotting them. Don't go there. I don't want to give my money to the Egyptian government who's got an anti-gay law. What we've learned is actually that's quite a toxic way of thinking, because your money's not going to the government. Like, maybe your visa fee might, but if you're going there and going to gay friendly businesses and putting your money there, you're actually helping the local gay community, and they're the ones who are struggling most. They're the ones who are trying to be erased by the government, and giving visibility to them is so much more impactful than boycotting the entire country. What we learn as well is, in such places where there isn't an obvious community and it goes underground, apps like Grindr become the gay scene. It becomes the way that word of mouth things are advertised. And we were in a small town in Russia back in 2014 called Yekaterinburg. And our friend there, we met from my friend in Moscow, who introduced us, he said to us, I was looking on Grindr, guys, and I couldn't find you. And we said, well, we're a monogamous couple. We don't need to use Grindr. We're not looking for hookups. And he said, no, here, can we use it for hookups? We also use it to connect with each other. That's how we find out if there's a party going on. That's how it's our gay scene. If you're traveling in places where there's no gay scene, you do need a Grindr profile to sort of connect with and tap into the local community.
Interesting, yeah.
So we set up a profile, and we met a lot of people in China, Mongolia, all these different countries through Grindr.
Wow.
And this is at a time, 2014, 2015, when Instagram wasn't what it is now. A lot of people you meet tend to be from social media, more so now than back then. It was still growing. So Grindr really was, and still is, a big thing for the gay community, a big important resource.
Mm.
And other gay apps as well. Blued, I think, is another one in Asia. It's changed its name now, Hornet and Scruff.
Yes.
Beyond hookup sex, it does have an important role to play.
You've traveled to so many different places, and you've always come from a really, really great lens that is so relatable to us and our audience. What are those things that kind of tie us together? Do you see any trends or ideas and things that kind of can be relatable?
Very simply, I think this is a terrible stereotype. Gym, all gays love going to the gym and having gym or aspiring bodies. I see that everywhere around the world. Wherever the gay you are, it's an awful stereotype. I'm sorry, but I've just seen that throughout the world.
It's fair. In
Mongolia or again in Canada. Lady Gaga, Taylor Swift, you know, the pop culture. We all love the same
pop icons.
Music. Let's not be too stereotypical. We do. We do get excited when we hear a pop track.
Yep.
And those two, I think, the most obvious that come to mind. But then at the same time, we are also different in many ways. We don't all want to party and do drugs and get laid till sunrise. Others want to go on a hike. Others want to go on an exciting wildlife adventure, do bird watching. It's a whole variety in a wonderful umbrella. But yeah, there are certain things I've noticed that unite us. We do all love to get on and love each other.
Yeah.
There's a lot more that we have in common than sets us apart.
Yes, get on and love each other, literally.
Our podcast and a lot of what we talk about is about authenticity. And it's really about finding your own authenticity and defining that for yourself. Do you feel like in this path of becoming a travel writer, putting together a guide for others to reference and research on their travels, as well as someone who has navigated how to
authentically
present themselves while also being careful and respectful and doing the research to be able to travel the whole world where there are restrictions on how authentic you're allowed to be? How do you approach that when you think about how it's defined you as a human?
Absolutely. How authentic you are when you travel really comes down to where you're going and the extent to which you need to go back into the closet for your own safety. And so we're going to Maspalomas Pride this next week, which is one of the most popular gay events in Europe. And it's very gay there. You're not going to take anything more than a harness and a few Speedos or something like that. And you can live your authentic, happy self there and be who you want. Now, I want to go to Azerbaijan. It's a place I've always wanted to go to in East Europe. I'm a big Eurovision geek, and it's one of the places I've not been to in Eurovision, and many other reasons I want to go to Azerbaijan. But this one's an East European country, which is a more conservative society, a lot of Islamic influence there. They don't have an anti-gay law, but then I'm not going to go there with my harness and my speedos and short shorts. And you know, it's a whole different way of approaching travel. And again, it goes back to the safety checks that Seb and I need to take before going to such places. Can we share a room in a double hotel? Yes, probably in the big branded ones. Do we be careful, look behind our back before we think of public displays of affection, most likely, you know, they're queer spaces. So yeah, it does depend on the place you're going to and the extent to which you need to go back into the closet. Unfortunately, we cannot, as gay people, be our authentic selves everywhere in the world. It's just a sad
reality
that we have to. And it's changing, it will change, but it's going to be a, you know, gradual change. It's the cards that life has dealt us.
Correct. But it's good to see some forward motion, which is positive.
And I love what you said earlier that I actually never, you know, regrettably thought about, was I was one of those people that would be hesitant to travel to a country that didn't necessarily want me to be there for
me too.
Solely being gay. But there's so much I want to see. You know, I'm very much a wanderlust type person. I love architecture and culture and design, and some of the places I want to see so badly, I'm too fearful. And, but I am somewhat of a voice for myself, and I try to be a proud gay voice and support other queer voices. And when you said that you can go to these countries and support local communities, because, you know, people of all different backgrounds and sexual identities and gender identities live everywhere, everywhere. I think that when you go, you are advocating and you are really exploring and supporting an international community of gay and other queer and LGBTQ plus people by literally picking up your book, reading more and educating yourself a little bit more about what the gay scene is or where the gay communities are and how you can seek out community. And then not only that, but also support them by spending money at their
businesses
or their restaurants or their cafes, or just trying to build that sense of relationship and long-term connection. That's incredible.
That's how we're going to get change. That's how we're going to get conversations that lead to awareness and change. And it's not an easy conversation, but the fact that those conversations are forced to be had. And here's a good example. Saudi Arabia, really beautiful. I really want to go from what I've heard about the architecture. But for years, we've been told that it's a place you wouldn't dare go as a gay. They're going to throw you off a wall and beat you and stone you to death. Now, because of their reliance on oil, they're desperate to change their where they get their money from. So they're pouring money into sports and tourist industry. And over the last 2 years, they've really opened up their tourism and allowed tourists to go there. And a few friends of mine in the gay travel industry, who are prominent online figures, they've been there and they were raving about how it's changed. It really has changed. Women are getting more rights, and it was so open. They saw gays living there openly, freely. I mean, not as freely as we know, but in a different way from what they were before. And, you know, you take it with a
pinch of salt.
I'm not saying, you know, but the point I'm trying to make is there's change. Change is there happening. They've gone to they've on the website of the Saudi Arabian Tourism, they've got a Q&A. And one question is, they put is, can I be, are LGBT travellers welcome? Is it safe for LGBT travellers? And the fact that they've done that, they've actually put that question there. The answer is, yeah, as long as you respect local custom. You know, it's...
Right.
But the fact that they've done, you know, again, I'm not trying to promote travel to Saudi Arabia. I'm not saying let's go for a big press trip there. The point is, there's change happening there. Now, where is that going in 10 years? And you know what I mean? That's the way we're starting to see progression.
That's great. I mean,
this cross spreads more around the world. We need it.
Absolutely.
If you want to be a part of the solution, you have to be a part of the change.
You have to be a part
of the conversation.
Yeah.
And especially if you are someone who wants to see the world and has that desire within them to travel and explore and build connection, what you have done and what you represent, you and Sebastian, that is so inspirational. And I definitely want to check out some more places that I may have been potentially hesitant or fearful to visit. Mm. And I just want to thank you so, so much for joining us today and sharing so much of your insight, as well as some of the stories that I think will be really inspirational to a lot of other people listening, for sure.
Thanks, Garrett.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am definitely picking up a copy of your book, which is out right now. You can get it on Amazon, and it's called Out in the World, The Gay Guide to Traveling with Pride. And I mean, what a huge accomplishment again.
Huge. So
thank you for traveling. Thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for writing this book.
Thank you, guys. It was lovely to speak to you both.
It was lovely to meet you. Thanks for connecting.
You too, thank
you. So after speaking to Stefan, I want to go to Bhutan.
You want to go to Bhutan?
Yeah. I want to go to Bhutan. I'm actually keen.
It's insanely a beautiful, incredible spiritual enlightenment that is waiting to happen.
I mean, he really sold it to us.
I mean, where's the bookings? Like, where's the tickets?
I'm not going to look at any photos though. We just want to go blind.
I actually want to go to Madrid.
Okay, Madrid Pride.
Because Madrid Pride, and I just want warm, sunny, beautiful weather. I want a Spanish cocktail. I just want to be
there'll
by the
beach.
There'll
be lots of erect penises there.
No, that's Bhutan. Bhutan has got the erect penises.
They both got erect penises, girl.
Well, until we book this said travel, we hope that you all enjoyed this episode and continue to build the most vibrant life you want by owning your authentic self.